Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Recording? Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Rock and Roll Podcast. I was going to think of something to say there and I just didn't. I told you I can't do the introduction parts. I'm going to like functionally call this a Women's Six Nations review, even though there is still a week left of the Women's Six Nations, because I am lucky enough to be joined by Jess Hayden again to bookend the tournament. Jess, it's so lovely to have you back.
Thank you. I hope that bookend was a pun, an intended pun.
Of course. We were here to talk about your book and now we're here to talk about, has it come true? Have the red roses come true?
They honestly, against Ireland, I'm sorry to bring it up so quickly.
It's been less than 1 minute.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was honestly, oh. I feel like that was the best I've seen England function ever.
Even I didn't, like, I thought it would be bad, but I didn't think it would be that bad. We are obviously not joined by Rhiannon Garth Jones, as we were discussing, because she had better things to do than come and talk to us about women's rugby, which I don't really know what better things there are to do than talk to us about women's rugby, but she found them, so.
Yeah, me neither, honestly.
So her loss, really. We do have, obviously, one round left of the Women's Six Nations. We've our Super Saturday still to come. What have you thought of this tournament as, like, and overall, obviously, we're going to talk about the sort of the six teams and the games this weekend. But has this tournament gone like sort of as you've expected, or has it? Because I feel like it's been like kind of a helter skelter Six Nations in a way.
Yeah, I think it's been really unpredictable. I, before the tournament, actually wrote a prediction that Wales were going to beat France.
We said that on here. We did. The three of us were like, I think Wales are definitely going to be good enough this season to be like comfortably the third place team and challenge France for second. Well,
yeah, I was certain, and it's so embarrassing. It just shows that like I know nothing, and the Wales.
I don't think that is what it shows, but I like we did say like Ireland will definitely finish bottom, and Wales will be like comfortably third and looking for second, and like neither of those things have come to pass, but. Yeah, I think like it's almost felt like every week there's like only really one team who you know like what they're going to do. Because everybody else, you're like, are you actually good or are you just like, what's actually going on here?
Yeah, I think it has just been difficult to predict. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, Ireland, you don't know what team's going to show up on the day. But I've been really impressed by them. Scotland as well. Didn't really know what to expect from them coming into the Six Nations, and we touched on that in the last podcast, that really wasn't sure how well they were going to do. Obviously the World Cup wasn't great for them, the build-up to the World Cup wasn't great for them. WXV was good for them though, and they seem to be kind of building towards this Six Nations with an eye on the next World Cup, but wasn't really sure what to expect from them. And I've been really pleasantly surprised. I think Scotland and Italy and Ireland are doing pretty well. Like I've been happy and like impressed by them. Obviously, you know that England and France are going to be the top two. If that hadn't happened, if we weren't kind of predicting that at this stage, then something's gone wrong for them. But yeah, the rest of the tournament, so unpredictable. Wales, don't even know where to start with that. Like, really not great. I guess we can go into a bit more detail a bit later on about them. But yeah, not good for them. But no, I mean, the biggest... The best thing about this Six Nations has to be Clean Maloney's return. I love it when something off pitch like that just takes everyone's attention for the right reasons. It's just such a, I think it's a really good sign of where Irish rugby is. So that's probably the best thing I've seen. But yeah, it's been unpredictable, but in the best way. It was I think sometimes it can be a bit boring when before the tournament you can make a pretty good guess about where every team's going to rank at the end of the tournament. But this time they've all kind of made us look silly, which is always a good thing.
I think it's such a mark of Clina Maloney as well, like as a player, but as like a sort of a person as well, that, you know, she just got named in a training squad and everybody lost their minds collectively. I don't actually, I know I was out when it happened.
Yeah.
I can't remember where I was. I was at a match or a concert. I was somewhere, maybe I was in Northampton actually at the Champions Cup, the round of 16. And I was getting texts like, have you seen the Ireland squad? And I was like, no, because I was out or whatever. And I was like, surely not. And just stood in the middle of like some random street in England being like, there is no way I'm reading with my eyes that Clina Maloney's in this Ireland squad. Like, I do actually genuinely believe that they just didn't tell David Nusafora. They were like, just sneak her back in. Like, he actually just does not need to know. It's not like he's paying us any attention anyway. Like,
yeah, he wouldn't be able to spot her in a crowded room anyway. I think the funniest thing about Irish rugby is that they announced that at 4:59 on a Friday in a fallow week of the Women's Six Nations. So they knew that like every journalist was on leave that week because, you know, it's exhausting doing a Men's Six Nations and a Women's Six Nations. You take leave in the fallow weeks. They knew that no one would be working and they just like put it out as like not even the top line of the press release. It was three paragraphs down. Oh, by the way, Clean Maloney's back.
She wasn't even in the photo. Like normally they'll put like if there's like a sort of remarkable bit of a squad update, they'll put them in the like sort of link photo. And she wasn't even in the photo. And you're just kind of like, don't try and sneak Clina Maloney back in as if we're not all going to see Clina Maloney's name and lose our fucking minds. It was really funny.
What was going to happen that weekend that we'd see her back on the bench and be like, oh, please back anyway, like it's just ridiculous. Oh, but it's so
her, like
it's classic that they did that. And Clee was one of the columnists that contested where I'm editor, so like I knew what was happening and that she was going to be back in the squad. And well, knew that she'd been called back into squad. I don't think she was even sure what that meant and whether she was going to be playing. It's all been such a whirlwind for her, and just amazing though for her to be back in the squad. I think it shows a better culture at Ireland.
I think they look less fucking miserable than they did last year, like for want of a better sort of way to put it, because they like, I think we can see it with Wales a little bit at the moment that they really just don't look like they want to be there at the moment. And I think you could see that it was like absolutely just radiating off Ireland last year, and I think that like whatever about results, that doesn't seem to be there anymore. And that's what you want to see. It literally, like by the end of the tournament last year, looked like they were being held against their will, and like that's not what you want to see. And obviously this year, like even if they hadn't won a game, I think that wasn't there. Like I was at the Italy game and it just felt better than being at games in last year's tournament. Like, I guess if we just go sort of straight into our first game is Wales versus Italy. Now, Italy obviously just lost at home against Scotland for the first time in, I believe, my lifetime. So I think it was 99 the last time they did that, and that will have been before I was born. So that's a bit embarrassing for them. Like things shouldn't happen that haven't happened like in the entire time I was alive, in my opinion. But Wales, on the other hand, like losing 40-0 at home to France. Whatever about losing to France, right? Because I think it became pretty clear that we were talking out of our arses when we said that Wales could beat France. Like it became clear that Wales were not going to beat France. But losing against France in that fashion, like scoring 0 points at home, never even really firing a shot, like what are Wales supposed to do at this point? Because obviously they've got that one more game against Italy, and you feel like they want to just finish this tournament and get out of town.
Yeah. So the game's at the Principality Stadium as well, which feels cruel to play against Italy at the Principality and finish what has been the worst tournament for Wales. Like they've had the wooden spoon before. I think the last time was 2018, but this is a real blow for them. Like to go potentially from WXV1 to WXV3 is a shock. I mean, that's not definitely what will happen, because they'll have to have like a playoff game between WXV2 and 3 to see where they end up, but yeah, really shocking. I think what Wales, so speaking to Hannah Jones yesterday, and for her it's very much like, get through this game and then we'll be in a review phase. Their focus is very much on the Rugby World Cup and still qualifying for that, but we shouldn't even be in a place where Wales are like, well, what's our next option to qualify for the World Cup? It's just there's something fundamentally wrong with how Welsh Rugby Union as a whole are viewing performance rugby at the minute. It's shocking. And, you know, Hannah was saying yesterday, we need a league in Wales. We need a domestic league, and or we need a team in the PWR. And I just think that often when Wales lose, it's so quickly like blaming other things and blaming the pathways and blaming all that. And all of that needs to come. They're right to call it out. But let's face it, there was just some really poor play this Six Nations. And, you know, Wales get into the opposition 22 and then come back with nothing. It's been really shocking. I think most of their like tries have come from moments of magic rather than kind of a structure and build up to scoring a try. It's just been disappointing. And, you know, I don't question their want at all. I know, like, I speak to Hannah every week for her column. I know how much she's hurting, and I don't doubt her at all. They are trying so hard. There's just, I think I'd give it a few reasons. I think they don't look fit. I think they're exhausted. I'm hearing from players that, not Hannah, but I am hearing from players that they are overtrained and just very tired and doing too much running in training. And over the course of the season, a lot of them are having to travel, pretty much all of them are traveling over the bridge to play in PWR and then come back because their central contract's in Cardiff. And then, you know, all of that really takes out of you. So I think that, yeah, they have contracts and that means they're professional, but their work-life balance is still pretty poor. So it's been a really poor tournament for Wales, and I hope that they can kind of find some part of a review that, you know, means that they'll improve for WXV2/3 and the rest of it. But yeah, really poor.
It's something we see with these teams. I think Wales may be the most stark example of it at the moment because of how quickly things sort of boomed after those contracts first came in. There seems to be a sort of not from the players, of course, but like at a union level, it seems to be like, well, we gave them the contract, like we're finished. And I think that England and France are the ones who are like, well, obviously not, because you have to keep investing in it and keep, you know, keep putting things in place, keep building on, like the contracts are literally like the contracts are like the foundation. And then you build up from that. Like you don't lay foundations of a house and go, well, that's my house now. Like those are just like little lines at the ground. You know what I mean? And it feels like, but you're right. Like it just, even with all of those caveats, I just don't think it's been good enough. And we've had this sort of, I think we spoke about it before the tournament as well, is that there's this sort of hesitation to criticize women's rugby players the same way as we would men's. Yeah. And I think part of that comes from like, oh, but if we say that they were bad, then people will stop watching and people will stop investing. But like, they are clearly bad. Like they're playing badly. Like, I don't think that they are all of a sudden bad players, but what we've seen in these four games has been nowhere near good enough. And again, like, not to be disrespectful to Ireland, but no team in this tournament should be going to Cork and getting blown away out the gate like that. Like, that's not the level that Wales are expected to be performing at now. And I don't think that expectation was unfair before the tournament started.
And I think Wales would be the first to say, you know, the players themselves would be the first to say that this hasn't been good enough and it isn't what they wanted to do. You know, they were completely kind of aiming at getting top three. You know, they weren't even saying third place, they were saying top three. They finished third before. They wanted to build on that. And yeah, I think it's definitely a question. I actually wonder, so Hannah said to me yesterday that she wondered whether WXB1 was the wrong place for them because they see how Scotland and Ireland came into this tournament firing and they'd been, you know, winning in their respective WXB2 and 3. And that helped them when they came into this tournament to be kind of focused on winning and in that good mindset. And she thought that maybe WXB1 had kind of drained them a little bit. She said that when you're winning, you can focus on your attack. When you're losing, you have to focus on your defence. And so their build up and focus on their defence. And then they haven't been attacking as well as they wanted to in this Six Nations. So I do, I kind of see that point, but that's a depressing place to be. We shouldn't be talking about like, no, I don't want to, we don't want to be in the top level of women's rugby. You know, 10 years ago, the Welsh team then would be biting your hand off to be playing a tournament against the best teams in the world because of the development that offers. But I'm not trying to disparage what Hannah thinks because I can understand why she feels like that. And I actually agree with her. It's just a really crap place to be. So yeah, it's been really bad. Let's see what the review says. I think it's going to need to be a really deep review. I don't think anyone's safe in that. Players or coaches or staff or whatever, but there is something wrong here, and the players are obviously talking about it and trying to bring attention to it. So I think we can say it's not good enough, and they would agree. And there's stuff that isn't the union's fault, like being drawn out of the defensive line and a 95 meter intercept try being scored against you, and none of the players been able to keep up with the player who's running 95 metres and scoring a try. Like, it's not good enough, but there's definitely stuff that can be changed kind of behind the scenes by the Welsh Rugby Union that will help them for future tournaments.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I think it's a bit of a, like a snake eating its own tail sort of thing with Wales, because I think what Hannah Jones is saying there about WXV being the wrong place for them is probably right in a way, but it's the kind of thing of like the same way winning is a habit, losing is a habit as well. And that's the one that they've fallen into. And obviously playing against New Zealand and, you know, they didn't play England, but playing against like New Zealand and Canada and playing against the WXB1 teams is so much more beneficial for a team like Wales than playing against, you know, Kazakhstan and Colombia like Ireland did. But it's only beneficial when the sort of experience of those tough games comes with, you know, like putting the pathways in place and them actually having like a proper training structure, them actually having like a proper sort of pre-tournament that wasn't, you know, splitting up for the Celtic Challenge and playing PWR, like not using the PWR as their sort of Six Nations training camp. Because I've seen people being like, but all of these players are really good when they play for Gloucester Harbury.
Yeah,
because they're in like a professional rugby environment and they're sort of being treated like professional athletes, and that whatever sort of it feels like, it just feels like everything is working against each other. Like one thing, anything that could have been a positive is sort of met by a roadblock. And like, I don't think that that's entirely on the union, because like you say, like, you know, the union's not making them throw intercepts and not be able to chase them back. But like, then it's coaching, then it's the union, then it's, they don't have, like, it's everything just in one. And it just feels like there's something like broken in Wales camp. Like fundamentally, it just feels like something is wrong there. I feel like the players need to get away from it. Like, I know it's with one more game, it really does feel like get this game finished and like leave Wales camp behind for a while. Like forget about the Six Nations. It doesn't matter anymore. Like just get out of that environment. It feels bad. And I think when it feels like outwardly bad for people watching, the is when you know it's really bad, like when they can't even kind of hide how sort of like septic it feels, because it just comes out on the pitch. It's been like really difficult to watch their games actually for the most part.
And you can see it in their faces, and like in Hannah's like post-match interviews, it's been really difficult for them. And yeah, I genuinely think all the players need a proper break, and they're not really getting it because of how the end of the PWR season is. They get a little break, but then they're back. So yeah, I mean, I think it's like less than 2 weeks or just 2 weeks for their break. I think it's back on the 11th of May, the PWR. So really not long at all. I just genuinely feel like I feel sorry for them. It's a tough ask.
It's happened so fast as well that you're just
It's a huge fall.
Can't stop the slide.
I don't know if you read it, but Hannah made a point that I hadn't thought of. And I do, again, like, I find excuses a bit annoying with things like this, because I get a bit like, well, come on, like that it needs investors, it's international rugby. But she made a good point, and she said that they have gone from everyone seeing them as the underdog. So if they perform well, everyone's like, wow, amazing, well done. But now it's like expected of them. So they've been working with their psychologist about how to deal with that pressure, which they're not handling that well. And they find they get their heads down a lot quicker in matches because they're losing. People are giving them crap on the sidelines, you know, not literally, but from whether they go on social media and see it or in the media or whatever. And they're finding that really difficult. So there is that. And again, I am very much like, these things are issues and they add to the overall picture, but there is definitely something fundamentally wrong happening in this team.
Yeah.
But yeah, though, this match is exciting because I love how Italy play, and seeing to turn it into a positive, Italy have been exciting, and especially their backs. They are playing some really like free-flowing, offloading rugby. Rigoni, I don't know if I said it to you, but I've been definitely thinking, I bet she's really annoying to play with, but she has those moments of brilliance, but she's like that teammate that tries a move all the time, even though it never works. It's really annoying. But
everyone else just has to sort of like go with her, and you're just sort of, oh, for fuck's sake, like I have to go with her again. And like, I feel like, weirdly, Michaela Solari was like the best player at doing that. And then obviously they lost her early on in the tournament, and you're just sort of thinking, but who's going to go with Beatrice Rigoni now? Like, she was the best one at doing that. But I think like I said, like I went to the Ireland Italy game up in Dublin a few weeks ago, and watching them in person, it's just like, your backs are really very quite good. Like, they are just really good to watch.
Yeah, the whole back line has been impressive the whole tournament. I think that as it's gone on as well, you can see them getting some more confidence of playing off each other. It's not always gone their way. And I think a lot of it's down to their timing. I think their timing has been off by, you know, 0.5 seconds at times, and that's kind of stopped their strike plays from firing. But really strong team, and to be fair, they back it up with some talent in the forwards as well. I think, you know, Silvia Tarani has been a standout for me this tournament. It's just, they are a team now, Italy, where it's not just Rigoni that you're like, wow, they have one great playmaker and the rest of the team need to build around her. I think what I do find frustrating with this Italy team is that I kind of just want to see them build the phases a bit more and build a bit more of a structure to their attack. But no, impressed. They look potentially, they're definitely in the top three fittest teams in the Six Nations as well.
Yeah, I think so.
The way that they're able to sustain their attack for the full 80s being, and their defence, but I mean, because they are running so much in attack, like, I think they've been really impressive for that. So this match could be a very difficult day in the office for Wales, because Italy will be looking to play a bit of a territory game as well with them. They can see that Wales don't really cope well with that.
I liked with Italy from the Scotland game as well. I know obviously they ended up on the wrong side of the result, but it was a different sort of game for them. Like the game against Ireland, and like that was obviously the other one that they were, you know, they won like narrowly or whatever, but like that was like a high scoring game. Like when they play well, it tends to be that sort of that like free flowing high scoring game.
Yeah.
And that game against Scotland was really tight and close and low scoring and like sort of give and take for like pretty much the whole game. And I thought like, I didn't really think that they would like stay in touch well in a game like that, like without sort of having that sort of flash, like we'll score three tries now sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, I thought they were really, I know that they lost. I thought they were really impressive though in that regard in that game. And I thought that it was something that it felt like just a different type of performance from them. And I think for Wales, like this game has gone from being a sort of an almost like you'd say, yeah, Wales will win that, to like it would be sort of upset of the tournament if Wales won this game now. And it's a home game against Italy. Like it's drastic how sort of how much it's fallen so quickly. And I think as well, playing it in the Principality, right? I don't know how you feel about Wales playing this game in the Principality. Like on the one hand, yeah, obviously it's great that they're playing in the Principality, whatever. But they haven't earned it, in my opinion. Like, I don't think that they should have to earn playing in the big stadium, right? But England put in the work. The RFU put in the work with the Red Roses to get to a point where they would sell, you know, 45, 50 plus thousand tickets at Twickenham with the sort of the years of investment and like actually building on this team. And it feels a little bit like Wales have gone, yeah, we'll put the game in the Principality Stadium. There's obviously not going to be a crowd there like there was even at Twickenham last week, never mind last year. And it almost feels like a sort of setting them up to fail to an extent. It's like, oh, look, they're not ready to play in the Principality Stadium. It's like, well, no, they're not, because you didn't get them ready to play there. You've just sort of put them there.
Yeah, they've had this road to the Principality plan where they want to sell out the Principality for Wales versus England in next year's Women's Six Nations, obviously before the World Cup, which is interesting. I don't think it'll be anywhere near full. I think, you know, they've tied it up with the women's finals day, so there'll be a decent crowd, but I'm not expecting it to be that great at all. I mean, the Principality is a really tough stadium to play in if you haven't got a big crowd, because the fans are so far back from the pitch, so the atmosphere is really quite difficult if you don't have fans kind of there. So I think that would be tough. I understand what you mean. You know, yeah, they sold out the Cardiff Arms Park, but what England did really well is moving the games around the country so that when you do have a game at Twickenham, you have a fan base of thousands who've seen you live in different parts of the country who almost come together to watch you play at the National Stadium. And
Ireland do the same thing. It's really exciting, like, yeah. Moving it between Dublin and Cork and Belfast. I really like that, because you just sort of, you got, look, like, no disrespect to Connacht, but you've got like a game per province except for Connacht, which doesn't count anyway. But it's like that thing of like, you know, if you live in Belfast and you've seen them play in Belfast and you really liked it and you had a great day out and the game was good or whatever, you'll go to the game in Dublin,
yeah,
next, like the next year. And likewise, like, I live sort of almost in between Dublin and Cork, so like I'm going to go to both of those games. Whereas, yeah, you know, like if there's two in Cork, you're just sort of thinking, oh, like I have to go to Cork again this weekend. But like it's I think that works. I just think that, yeah, I can't see it being anything other than a difficult day for Wales, unfortunately. And I'd love to be wrong, but it doesn't feel like, I don't know where Wales get the sort of the spark from between losing 40-0 next door to France and coming into this game then against Italy. I don't know where it would sort of come from in the space of a few days.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, they're talking about, again, going back to basics and working on their fundamentals and when they get into the 22, converting those opportunities. But, you know, that's been the headline of Wales's training for this whole Six Nations, and it hasn't paid off. So, yeah, really disappointing. And I'm interested to see what the review is. There's always a review after every tournament, so it's not weird that there's a review, but I would hope that this review goes quite deep into what the issues are.
I think they need to be harsh, because there's no point in sort of kid-gloving it. Like,
yeah, for me, this is a wholesale change. Like, there needs to be a proper review into this, not just into the union, but also what's going wrong in the performance aspect. And I'm sure the Welsh Rugby Union are thinking, what is going on this year? We're doing really badly, and they just need to look into it, because it definitely, there needs to be huge improvements before next year. Because at the moment, Wales could not qualify for the Rugby World Cup, and that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, Ireland didn't qualify for the last one. Like, I know exactly how crazy it is. It's one of those things that you really don't believe it until it actually happens. And then you go, oh, look, I'm watching this World Cup and Ireland are not in it. Like, no, you know, the teams like Fiji and South Africa who were in the World Cup, and it's like they up off the day, like, gave really good accounts of themselves in that World Cup. But it's like, you're in this World Cup and Ireland aren't. Like, think about that for a second. You know, Ireland won a Grand Slam a few years ago and now they're not in this World Cup. It can sort of get away from you really, really fast. I mean, talk about things getting away from you fast. I said last week that if Ireland could sort of, I said keeping England under 40 would be like a sort of a hell of a return and scoring a couple of tries. And then it was 88-10. And the thing is, I don't doubt that if this game was 5 minutes longer, England would have scored 100 points. And that's kind of extremely terrifying. And I just don't know what the fuck is the point. I just don't know what we're doing. I don't know why we're putting money into a women's Lions tour instead of, like, when England are beating the other teams in the Lions 88-10. Nothing that happens anymore makes any sense. I'm going to be really honest with you, Jess. I find England fucking insufferable to watch this year. Every England game, I'm like, turn it off. I don't care anymore. I don't care how good Ellie Kildon is. I don't want to see it anymore. Cool, you scored 3 tries and you just gave like an absolutely pin perfect assist for Abby Dow's 3rd try. Like, that's so brilliant for you. Well done, Ellie Kildon. Like, everybody, boulevards for Ellie Kildon. But it's just, oh, it's really difficult. At halftime this game, I was like, can I actually physically watch 40 more minutes of this?
You know what's really annoying about Ellie Kildon is that she is arguably the best rugby player in the world at the minute. She's really talented in loads of other things. She always looks brilliant no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. Her hair manages, like, she just does very well. And
it's got that Roman Entomac thing of like, how is your hair still this good?
Yeah.
Like, and what's going on? I don't,
She could have a career as a lifestyle photographer or fullback or whatever. And she's also just annoyingly lovely and a really good person.
Oh, she's just got it all. Actually, like, the last thing I wanted to hear. Fuck Ellie Kildon. May the message go forward from here. Ellie Kildon is no friend of mine. I don't even know what Ireland are supposed to, like, I said it last week as well, that going away to Twickenham after that victory against Wales was like probably the worst game Ireland could have had, because if it had been the Scotland game, you could have like really built on that, and I think that there would have been a real opportunity for Ireland to do something special there. But as it's like, you just go to Twickenham and I just like, it's just like,
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What is actually the point? Like, I don't know what Ireland are supposed to take from that, because they didn't play particularly badly. They are just like a different universe of team to the Red Roses. And again, like, that's not their fault. They are doing everything they can. And yeah, look, like, they let in, what, 18 tries or whatever it was. Like, it's not good enough, obviously. And I'm not pretending that it is. And the only try that they scored was a penalty try. But at a point, it's like, what are you actually supposed to do when you're playing the Red Roses? Like, you can say something positive about the Red Roses, because all I see when I look at them is just rage. I'm just like, they are the team, and I know that they are, as you said, like that sort of small p professionalism, but they are the team that everybody wants. They are that team that everybody wants to be, and it's like, I don't know what the other teams are supposed to do when they play against them, because it feels like there really is nothing that you can do.
I think it's interesting, and yeah, you're right about the small p professionalism. I understand why that's so infuriating, because it is. And the Lions tour point, absolutely agree. I do not see why we're doing a Lions tour. I think that is just to make some money, and it's not a way to properly support.
It doesn't make any sense. They're not ready to do it, because, well, like, I don't agree with just picking things up from the men's game and going, this will work here, and just doing it without thinking about it anyway. But I just think, like, England have very comprehensively beaten Wales, Scotland and Ireland. Like, if you were picking a combined team from those four countries, you would just pick the England team.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this is the thing. Do you make it that you have to have a certain number from each country? What's the point in that? Because it's not really a best of the best then, is it? I think the best way the Lions could have gone about it, and for what it's worth, what I was suggesting when Royal London and the Lions were first kind of looking for suggestions was, okay, put the money up front into the teams and give them 5-10 years and have a Lions tour at the end of that that helps those nations build and, you know, be working on the marketing, help them grow their audiences so they can sustain themselves and blah, 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 and then get to a Lions tour in like 10 years time. That would be interesting. But everything about it's wrong. New Zealand, how many fans do you reckon are going to fly to New Zealand to watch that? Not many. The travelling fans at the World Cup were few and far between that weren't family members or being paid to be there or funding themselves there because they're going to work it. Like, it really, I just think it's a really...
I thought it was a bit more interesting when they were talking about maybe doing it against France. And yeah. I was like, in a way, like, all of these teams play France every year in the Six Nations. But if you want to do a Lions team, like, English people... As English people especially, because it's going to be majority English players, could go to France for a weekend to watch a Lions test. But like doing it against New Zealand, like I say, it just feels like they're just doing an England versus New Zealand test series. And that's fine if that's what you want to do, but just do that. Like, it winds me up. And then you watch games like this where it's 88-10 and like Ireland coming off a hell of a performance against Wales. I know everything that we've said about Wales sort of being... To quote Warren Gatland in the doldrums, but it's like Ireland were really good in that game against Wales. It wasn't just that they sort of got by a team playing badly. Like, Ireland played in a way that I haven't seen them play in years now. And to sort of have to back that up with just getting humiliated at Twickenham. And I don't doubt that the players know that that's what's going to happen. But like, whatever way you slice it, sort of conceding 88 points and, you know, if Holly Aitchison had to worry about place kicking, it's going to be a lot more than that. But like, it's one of those things where it just feels pointless. It feels like a pointless exercise that one week in the Six Nations. But what, like, England won this game, I think 50-0 last year. So it's markedly worse, whatever way you sort of slice it. Like, it's much, much worse. And yeah, I don't know what you're supposed to take from it as an Irish supporter or as a neutral or even as an English supporter, to be honest, because like, the England players are just like, yeah, we're fucking brilliant. We're way better than these guys, but we knew that yesterday. So, like, is it a waste of time? I don't know.
The one thing I'd say is that all tournament and before the tournament, John Mitchell and the players have been talking about a new style of attack and how every player on the pitch has a role. And you might not see the role, but it'll be really exciting when it comes together. And every week players have been saying, oh, it isn't quite firing, we're not quite there yet, but we're building on something and we're going to have a multifaceted attack and it's going to be exciting and no one could ever criticize us for our maul again, da 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 da. And
good for them.
Against Ireland, I think they finally showed us that, and they demonstrated their attack and that they can score again, you know, many different ways and with many different people. And I was looking at Zoe Aldcroft and thinking, you are, you know, former World Rugby Player of the Year, is a phenomenal player, but she's one of those players, and she'd probably hate me using this term, but is a donkey, does all the hard work that no one really sees and doesn't really get much credit for it. Saying that, she did get World Rugby Player of the Year, but a lot of people don't like recognize that as hard work.
Yeah.
And actually, she was shining against Ireland. You know, that... she made two like really good line breaks that I can think of and scored a try on one of them because of how the players around her were like setting her up and putting her in the right space. And that was really impressive, I thought. So I would say, yeah, what do we learn? Not much. I didn't expect it to be 88-10. I thought that Ireland would get closer. If you were looking to do your dream 15 of this Women's Six Nations, or even if you just look at the last round, would you pick a single Ireland player? I'd pick Aoife Wafer, and maybe
probably would.
Yeah, for the whole tournament, who would you have from Ireland in your squad?
Probably Aoife Wafer, and probably not anyone else, to be totally honest.
Who would you have out of interest?
I was gonna say, like, maybe it is Niamh Jones then, but it sort of feels like, is that like a sort of process of elimination type thing. I think Neve Jones is brilliant. But I don't think that she's played her best rugby in this year's Six Nations.
I would just say that the one huge positive for Ireland is that, like, Aoife Wafer has been, in many ways, like, a triumph. Very good. Back from injury.
I think you could argue her for player of the tournament even without sort of discounting the England players. Because I think sometimes when you talk about things like player of the tournament, you're like, who's your player of the rest of the tournament? But I think even if you had, if you included, Ellie Kildon's player of the tournament, right? But even if you included everyone else, I think that Aoife Wafer would hold her own in a sort of a nominee pool of player of the tournament players. And I think that nobody saw that coming for an Ireland player before the tournament. I've also been very sort of, not anti Dana O'Brien, but I'm not particularly pro Dana O'Brien, but I thought she was brilliant against Wales. I really did have to sort of eat my hat about Dana O'Brien, because I spent the whole week before that game, I was like, just fucking start Fowley. It worked really well in the first half against France, that kicking game that Fowley can bring. When she came on against Italy, it sort of saved the day, because Dana was having a bit of a nightmare against Italy. It's like, stop persisting with this picking Dana O'Brien thing. She's not ready. It's doing her more harm than good, putting her in these games that she's just not ready for. And then she started against Wales, and I was like, for fuck's sake, what are we doing here? And then she had this unbelievable performance against Wales. I was like, oh, maybe Dana O'Brien actually was ready all along. It's been great, for Ireland. But then you're at this totally stupid point where you're losing 88-10 to England, and you're like, but hasn't it been a great tournament? And I hate that's good enough, but...
I think that I wouldn't want to call it an anomaly match, because it's always going to be really difficult to face an England who are at Twickenham Stadium and in incredible form and have this revitalised team culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, I think whatever about Ireland, that was the best I've seen England play in a couple of years.
Yeah.
They were really, really terrifyingly good.
Yeah, I genuinely think that England's attack was so good that... Yeah, it's a tough day in the office for Ireland, but there's really little to learn from that. I don't think they played terribly. I think the last 10 minutes, heads were gone. They were letting England walk them in. But other than that...
I think England would have put a bit of a pasting on any team playing like they did, even New Zealand or Canada. I really do think that they would have 100%. Blown anyone out of the water with that performance. Whatever about... Ireland conceding 88 points, and it was really ugly. I mean, by half time, to be honest, but the whole second half, it was just you just wanted it to end for those Ireland players. But I do think that England were just, it was such a good performance. I find it difficult sometimes. It's something I said last week as well. I find it difficult sometimes to praise the England players, because it's well, obviously you're good, you're fucking professionals, no one else is, blah, blah, blah. And you end up sort of discounting them for these big wins, because it's the playing field is so uneven. But they were really good. Every game up until now, there's been something missing, even though they've won, obviously, convincingly in all those games. But there has been something missing. And you could see that the performances weren't, at the same level as we've seen. But you could sort of see the first game against Italy, I found so interesting, because it was... You could see them sort of doing a jigsaw almost in real time for what they were going to try and what worked and didn't. They never looked like they didn't know what they were doing. They looked like they were figuring it out. And there's been a bit of that all tournament, and it's looked really intelligent and really, really interesting. And then against Ireland, they didn't look like they were figuring it out anymore. They were it's taken us three games. Everything is we finished the jigsaw. Then they just went out there and they just absolutely fucking blew Ireland away. And it was kind of breathtaking. I do think they would have done that to any team. It just happened to Ireland, were just the unlucky sort of lambs of the slaughter almost.
And I will 100% accept all the criticism of England, and that it's really annoying when a team is doing incredible stuff.
I don't think it's even criticism of England. Yeah. It's more just frustration that our teams aren't England.
Yeah, I get that. I really do. But I would also say that they are absolutely showing what can be achieved when you invest properly and have all the infrastructure around the team and have a good culture, all of that. They are leading the way. And I think what they're so good at is, they are by far the best team in this Six Nations and by far the best team in the world. And they are paving the way. They are showing what can be achieved. So as much as I understand why it's so frustrating, and I think I said to you before, often find myself kind of bored by it, bored by England's performances, because I'm like, okay, what next? What, where's the building here? Whereas when you see Ireland beat Wales and you're like, wow, that's really interesting. Like, to me, that was the most interesting and fun to watch match of the tournament. England do represent is what every union should be aiming for. And they're not perfect, 100%. But they're close to it. And so if you find them annoying and frustrating for every other reason, at least they are showing what's possible.
I think it's so important that they're there, and like that they are that sort of so much more like embarrassingly better than everybody else, because it is embarrassing getting 90 points put on your team. And I think that if what it takes is, you know, another year of England embarrassing every other team for every other team to sort of get their heads screwed on, like I feel like we say it every year, so sometimes it does feel a little bit like you're you know, talking to an empty room to an extent, but it's like they are the sort of the blueprint. That's what, you know, your team can be like that if you put the time and money in that they've put in, and then, you know, the game won't be embarrassing anymore. And Wales did show that that can be done really quickly. New Zealand showed it at the World Cup. You kind of have to stick with it. That's the thing. And like, that's what England have done that none of these other teams have done. I really do like to think that Ireland can go out and beat Scotland on Saturday, but I don't know if that's copium a little bit. I think Scotland have had an impressive tournament, even though they've only won two games. They just obviously won their second game. I feel like they've had a better tournament than their results suggest, maybe. But
yeah, agreed.
I don't know with Ireland, it's the question is for me, I suppose, is that can they get their heads back up after that, like that sort of, it's that humiliation coming after that Wales game, that sort of that high to low. Can they get back up for one more game, or is it just a case of, you know, did that sort of put the full stop on their tournament? Because I really hope it didn't.
No, I hope it didn't. And they've recovered from losses before, and we can see how they perform after a loss. So I don't think it will. I think there'll have been a lot of mindset going into this match that they knew they weren't going to win. They were trying, and it didn't go well. And I do hope that it will be kind of heads up. Let's focus on finishing strong, on a high. It could be, and it is a really interesting match, Ireland Scotland. Obviously, because it's all to play for with the third place, it's automatic qualification for the World Cup. And if you think back to 2021, when the Ireland Scotland was the, you know, last chance saloon match to qualify for the World Cup, it was the final chance to qualify for the World Cup. And fast forward 3 years to today, to this weekend, and
this episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
One of those teams will qualify at the earliest possible opportunity for the World Cup, and they'll be in WXB1. And that's incredible. That is a huge mark of progress. And, you know, for Ireland, it means a lot more, I think, because they failed to qualify the tournament after they hosted it. Obviously Scotland won last time 2018. The score was 2018. It happened in 2021. It's confusing. They obviously won. It didn't won that match, got into the World Cup. There's that to play for. So this match is fascinating to me. I think it's the most interesting match of the weekend.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. And I think that like the Ireland that played against Wales could absolutely give Scotland a game. And I don't know if I'm confident enough to say that they definitely could win. Like, that's the thing. Obviously, they can win. But I'm not confident enough to say that, like, they will or they might or whatever. I think there will be a decent crowd. Like, and there was a good crowd in the RDS for Ireland, Italy. I didn't make it to the Wales game in the end, but which really fucking annoyed me. When I was watching it on TV, I was like, they're winning by loads of points. And I'm at home. But I think it could be a really like a bit of a sliding doors moment for Ireland almost, because things got so bad so quickly. And Ireland fell from this sort of, you know, they were the team that were sort of what we were saying about Wales before the tournament of like, they are probably like comfortably third, or they were certainly like fourth slash third for a long time. And then all of a sudden it was like, they are now last, like they are comfortably last. Mm-hmm. And last year's Six Nations was such a low, and like whatever happens, obviously it's better than that. And like, that's not a high bar, but at the same time, it would have been easy to not clear that. And winning that game sort of does banish that a little bit. And I do wonder, is there an element of like, would WXB1 be the wrong place for Ireland the same way as it was the wrong place for Wales? I fear it might be, but there's another win there for them. And I think if you'd said to anybody before this tournament that like Ireland could leave it with two wins, and one of them would be a bonus point win, like, I think you would have laughed, to be honest. I don't think anybody would have predicted that we'd be sort of talking about Ireland as like, maybe they could win their second game this tournament. Like, I think it's been a great tournament for Ireland in context, like however it goes on Saturday, but there is another win there for them. And it's whether those players are able to grab that. And I really think they can. I think Scotland have been really good, actually. I think they've had a really good tournament. But yeah, I do think that this is going to be like a really sort of, I think it's going to be like a niggly game. It's going to be like a really close, sort of terrifying game for everyone. You're just going to be like, I think it's going to be tight. And I kind of don't like that, because the Wales game wasn't tight, so I didn't feel like nervous or anything. Because I was like, oh, Ireland are going to win this. It's so much fun.
I honestly think it will go right down to the wire. I think it's going to be so close, yeah, so tight. These are two teams on the rise with so much to play for. Yeah, it could go either way. I personally think Scotland will win, but I definitely think it could go either way. And whoever kind of holds the momentum at the start of the match, especially, could go far. I think Ireland need to be very wary of Scotland's counter-attack. They've been quite good at that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ireland obviously want to play a kicking game. They always seem to like want to do that, which has been fantastic. I think it's been fantastic this Six Nations, like to see them be able to take the pressure off themselves. If we are just discounting the Ireland, the
it didn't work when they were kicking to Ali Kildon, though, did it?
Yeah, if the person or the receiving end of the ball is the world's best player, then it's not going to work. But again, most teams, it's been really
good. Fuck Ali Kildon.
But I think that because Scotland have been so good at the counter-attack, like that's something they'll need to be really wary of. But then, you know, they had pretty good practice with that last week. So I think it will be very close. And yeah,
I do wonder if it'll be one of those games where like we kind of saw with Ireland against Italy, like Scotland might just be better at winning a sort of tight game. Like they know how to win a little bit more than Ireland do right now. Yeah. And I do think that does kind of matter. Like I think we saw that in that Ireland-Italy game where the win was there for Ireland and they didn't really know how to get it, because it's just not something, like I said, like losing is a habit. Like it's not something that they've been accustomed to. But I do think that that's probably the most exciting game of the weekend. And obviously then we end on France versus England. I mean, what's the fucking point, man? Like, there's no way that England don't win this quite comfortably. Like, I don't think France have actually had a great tournament by their own standards. I think they had a better tournament last year than they've had this year, to be honest.
I think that France always kind of build up in a tournament, and I don't think they were even kind of in full flow last weekend. I think that...
No, they weren't. They weren't trying. Yeah. But the thing is with France is that, like, they don't really have a tournament. Like, they have... It's almost like they have, like, a pool stages and a final, because England-France is, like, the final of the Six Nations. That's whereas, like, every other team is playing a tournament. So, like, they, you know, they have that sort of mentality of, like, well, it's a final. Like, anybody can win a final. You know, a final can be anybody's day. And they really do just have this one game. But I just don't see it. Maybe I'm just conditioned to not see it, though.
I think it's going to be close. So my prediction is that whoever's ahead at half time will lose the match, because I think
it makes sense.
And I think like that could be quite a lazy prediction, because in last year's Women's Six Nations England France match, England were ahead 33-0 at half time, and then France still lost the match, but it was only 38-33, so it's a 5-point game in the end. They scored 33 points in the second half. England only scored 5. Quick maths. And so I think it's like they are quite good at coming into a game. And I think this could be quite close. And I'm not just saying that to add some jeopardy to this match, because
I really liked that game last year, because it was like England played rugby in the first half and France played rugby in the second half. So like everybody who was there, obviously it was this like big sold out thing. It was such a huge occasion, but everybody who was there, but everybody watching was just like, this is great because we get to see England play for 40 minutes, then we get to see France play for 40 minutes. Like, you got to see the best of both teams, like, one at a time. It was really nice. Like, they didn't, like, they let each other shine. Like, they didn't overlap each other. They didn't try and play rugby at the same time. Like, they really, like, France were like, you know, you're at home, you can go first, you have your 40 minutes, and we'll do our 40 minutes. And we're like, it was, I thought it was brilliant. It was so much fun. I'd love a game like that again this year, just like a really stupid game. Like, game was so stupid. It didn't make any sense. It's like, why didn't England just play rugby for the whole game? Or like, why didn't France just play rugby for the whole game? Like, they, like, France let England have a 40-minute head start, and then England stood and let them catch up, and it was really, really funny. It was such a goofy game, but I think it could be something like that again. Not as, I don't think it'll be as extreme. I don't think England will be winning 33-0 at halftime, but I do think it could be that sort of, that high scoring, like, you score a try, we score a try, you score a try, we score a try game. And I think that ultimately England will always have one more try in them than any other team, especially now that they're like all of a sudden the fucking world-beating, globe-trotting attacking team.
I think that England will win that match, and I think they'll win it by at least 10 points, but I think that it will be close for a long time. I do think with France, it's almost like you can't read too much into their performance for the whole Six Nations, because you don't know what's going to happen at the end. As you said, they do almost look at it as like a pool stage, and then the final match against England is kind of all to play for. So yeah, I think that it's an interesting game. It's going to be really exciting. I think watch out for England's back three is like the most basic bit of punditry ever. But
watch out for this fucking tiger that stood on your lawn. Like, it's just like, but they are so good. Like, again, that sounds like a really stupid, like, elementary thing to say, but it's kind of the only thing you can say. Like, they are just literally so fucking good. I don't think there's a better. It's what really stands out for me is that you've got Jess Breach, who is probably the member of your back three having the quietest tournament, and you're just like, that's Jess Breach though.
But so she's like still absolutely world class.
What the fuck are the other two? Like, if Jess Breach is your quiet one, and it's been terrifying. Like, England have been really good everywhere across the board, but they really have just been like, Abby Dow and Ellie Kildon are the two best players in the world right now, and nobody's going to live with them. So
like, I think as soon as the ball gets past the centres, you know they're going to score. And I think who I've been really impressed by just quickly is Tatiana Hurd, because when she has the ball, you can see how she reads the play so well. Like, Holly gives her the ball, and then she already knows who her options are, outside her, inside her, and the players who are outside her are really, really good at making the defense work hard, and you don't know where the ball's going. And when I was saying earlier about when Zoe Allcroft scored a try, there was if you rewatch her that try, what I'd really encourage you to look at is Holly Aitchison has the ball in her hands. She pass it to Tatiana Hurd. Before she's passed the ball, Tatiana Hurd has like scanned the pitch. You see her looking around. She knows exactly where this ball's going. Maud Muir is then, or it might be Lark Atkin-Davis, I can't remember, is putting that one Irish defender into the narrow channel. And you've got Meg.
I think it was Maud Muir.
Was it Maud? And then whoever else is on the wing, they are, but Meg Jones was really good. Is pulling the defence out, and then Zoe had this brilliant gap in the midfield that she could just run through and score a try. So it's that kind of, that play has been so intelligent. Like, Tatiana Hurd has been one of the, she's a playmaker, but I don't think it's gone as noticed. Meg Jones as well, absolute rock star. Love her to bits. She is incredible. Have you seen her story on O2 Inside Line podcast about shaving her dad's head? Class.
Yeah,
love that.
I love this, like, something we spoke about before the tournament as well, the sort of the personality of players, and I think we get to see so much more of that. Like, Ellie Kildon just being like the evidently coolest person in the world and just being like, I kind of hate talking about rugby when I'm not playing it. Like, but I guess we're going to talk about rugby now. Like, I just think that they are, you know, they are the gold standard, even though, like we've said, it's so far from perfect. They are they're small P perfect, like, at the moment. And I just think that they are playing so, so well. I'm a huge Holly Aitchison fan. Like, I really fucking love Holly Aitchison so, so much. I think I don't care if she can't play skick. She's perfect to me. But I will let you go because you do have other places to go and be super important and know loads about rugby on. But I want to ask you one more question. If England don't win this game, obviously France win the Grand Slam, win the tournament. Is this tournament a fail for England, do you think, if they don't win this Grand Slam?
I think they'll see it as that, yeah. They will see anything but Grand Slam victory as a failure, for sure. So they will review it and see it as, like, you know, the worst day they've had since 2022. But I don't think it has been. I think that they've tried something new and it's functioned pretty well towards the end. They've played new combinations, given out new caps, playing a whole new style. If you look at the content from their camp that even the players are producing themselves, it looks like they're having just a really fun time. So I don't think it's been a failure.
Which is such an important part of it as well. Like, that, you know, that can sound sort of wishy-washy and like a little bit powder puff, but I think that is so important. Like, we can see coming out of the Wales camp sort of how much not having a good time can affect your performance. And I think that being happy in that camp matters so much. And they are just absolutely singing. And I do think that there's an element, like, of if they don't win, like, they were sort of, it was almost like a development tournament in a weird way, where they were like, everything is about the World Cup now, you know, that home World Cup. Like, they will, even if they don't win this game, which I do think they will as well, but like, it wouldn't matter in 18 months' time that they didn't win the Six Nations if they go and win that World Cup, and everything they've built in this Six Nations kind of goes towards that, I suppose.
I agree. And one thing I just wanted to say on the culture is, if last summer, when John Mitchell was announced, whenever that was, if you had told me that in a year's time we'd be watching him do the stanky leg with players and dancing, and them all wearing masks of his face, and he's loving life, and the players all universally are talking really positively about him, when they didn't speak positively behind the scenes about Sam Middleton, and, you know, only hearing pretty good things about him, and he's doing this whole new style of attack, and everything that we worried about hasn't come out yet about his kind of behavior, whatever, in the past. I think that I'd be really surprised, but happy.
A turn up for the books. Like, I didn't see it coming anyway. Like, maybe he was just meant to be coaching women's rugby the whole time. Like, maybe he was just fucking miserable because he was supposed to be coaching women's rugby and he wasn't doing it. Like, it's been remarkable. I think the last thing England needed was, like, unlocking another level. But here we find ourselves with England unlocking another level. So good for them, I guess. Jess, like, thank you so much for coming back and joining me to sort of round off the Women's Six Nations, and congratulations on England's Grand Slam victory, I suppose.
You didn't mean that at all, which I understand.
I'm really quite bitter about it, to be honest, but like, this is what we spoke about before the tournament. Like, I do still really enjoy this England team, but I'm a bit fucking sick of it now, and like, overall, I think that's a positive thing.
I don't think you do. You're not convincing me, but no, I understand. I genuinely want. I want, if I could, like, say this is what I want to happen in the final round, it would be a Wales win, an Ireland win, and an England win. That's be what I would want. That's like, if I was being really biased and saying I, as a supporter, this is what I want. That's what I'd want to happen. Ireland, because I think it's like such a good story. Not qualifying for the World Cup, then getting there on the first time of asking, Clean Maloney's back, Scott Beeman's in, there's a new style of play, blah blah blah. I want that for you. I want that for Ireland.
There you go. Jess hates Italian and Scottish people. The message that she is giving out on this podcast,
it's finally come out.
Jess Hayden cancelled.
I thought you liked, thank you, Ireland.
I think everyone should support Ireland, to be honest, but you didn't have to say that you hate Scottish people. That's just a bit too far. Jess, thank you so much for joining me again. I really enjoyed it. And it's just, It's so nice to talk about women's rugby.
I know, and we didn't even have to do the token mention of the
I know, like, Munster won fucking Loftus-Versfeld last weekend. I was like, I'll leave it at the door. It's fine. I enjoyed it at the weekend. I don't need to enjoy it again today.
Who cares?
I mean, I care quite a lot, but it's fine. I care about Ireland more now this week. And I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Like, thanks everyone for listening, and like, we'll do a podcast next week, I suppose. Bye.
Thanks for having me. It's always lovely to chat to you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.